We're going to have a joint presentation, or divided into two. So I'll deal with the first part, and Anne-Marie will take over to make some further comments and reach conclusions. Outcome-based frameworks or approaches. Anne-Marie and myself had a book published last year about delivering welfare and social services in the UK, and we had a chapter in that book on performance indicators and so on. And we had noticed in that, particularly with reference to Scotland and Wales, a kind of use of outcome-based approach by the Scottish and Welsh administrations. And then, of course, Northern Ireland began to follow suit with the OBA. Now, we have done some further work comparing Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, and that will be published in a chapter in what's called the Social Policy Reviews, Policy Press publication, coming out in a couple of months' time. But today, I want to mainly focus on Northern Ireland and the influence of OBA, so that's a slight context to what we're doing. We're going to divide the presentation into two, about three of these topics each. We don't have a lot of slides, got a number of slides, but not a great number. So I'm going to look at some concerns raised by the use of OBA for the Programme for Government, taking a more kind of critical approach to OBA, but I'll explain that in a moment or two. Then secondly, look at forms or types of outcome-based approaches. And thirdly, some of the conceptual difficulties, dealing with some of them briefly and just pinpointing one or two of the key ones before Anne-Marie continues. So firstly, concerns about the use of OBA. Now, I probably, like many people, sort of first came across OBA really in the context of the production of the Programme for Government framework, which was put out for consultation. And I read this framework, read it again. I kind of realised I thought I'd read this before somewhere. And of course, it was the Scottish National Performance Framework that I was largely reading. Now, I'm not going to go into the role of that and copying of that, but there was one important lesson to be learnt up, and this was the first of several concerns. And that was, of course, if you look at the Scottish Programme for Government, which is an annual publication, this is the current one, or the Welsh Programme for Government, you will see very little reference to outcomes. It's not really based on an outcomes approach. Scotland Performs has a rather different role and the use of indicators. So that was really the first concern. How could you use OBA methodology, is basically an evaluation methodology, for a programme for government? What happened next was, of course, the outcome of the consultation, which was a fairly major change made in the programme for government. As you're probably aware, or if you can refer back to it, what happened was that the list of outcomes, indicators and measures was changed, the list of indicators was dropped, the measures became indicators and were renamed measures. So that was fairly fundamental, it was slightly puzzling. And then, of course, it emerged that this really had been advocated by some organisations promoting OBA. out of the, I think, 750 responses to that consultation. So it looked to me as if OBA had rather taken over the programme for government. So I thought I'd better learn more about it. So I read Mark Friedman's book. And that's when, as it were, a third or major concern hit me. And that looking at the back of the book, there seemed to be no reference to academic references. It was a kind of a book almost with only one or two academic references, which in these days of academic research frameworks and so on is highly unusual. So if Mark Friedman didn't think much of academics, as appeared to be the view, what did academics think of Mark Friedman and its OBA? Well, having looked at some of the recent textbooks then, it was maybe equally surprising to see that there was almost no mention of OBA, as occasional mentions or a few comments. And even if you, and I just brought it with me to show you that I do have such things, the Sage Handbook of Governance, which is one of the key books you must have in public administration, but edited by Mark Beaver, but very comprehensive and basic in public administration, and there's scarcely any mention of OBA in it. So this was a sort of third puzzling concern. Now, on the other hand, it is true that there were 750 replies to the consultation, and if you read, or at least the ones that were published, you'll see that many of them gave their support to an outcomes-based approach. Many of them gave their report specifically to OBA. Now, there are one or two critical responses. The British Medical Association, I remember, did note that there was no robust evidence at all to support the use of OBA in their response. But there was this general level of support. But if you looked at it more closely, you'd find that's about all the responses said to the consultation. They didn't go into any detail into why they supported it. They didn't go into any detail as what they thought an outcome-based approach meant. They didn't mention any alternatives. So there was kind of more kind of issues raised. Now, given that this was followed, of course, by the collapse of the Assembly and Executive, it may have appeared that the OBA and the Programme for Government would sort of be forgotten about or placed very much on the back burner, which maybe seemed to be the case. But, of course, only a few weeks ago, the Civil Service, or Department of Finance, produced a briefing document on the future budget, in which they very much placed the OBA-based Programme for Government at the centre again, or kind of led with it. There are actually some changes. There are now only 12 outcomes instead of 14. the list of indicators has become population indicators and so on. But obviously, it was still regarded as having a lead role. Now, this again, you know, leave some concerns about what is happening and the use of evidence. Now, CARES, of course, is involved in the transfer of knowledge. And in this case, with OBA, the basic core of knowledge lies within the discipline of public administration. All these concerns about performance indicators, outputs, outcomes, and so on, it's core public administration material. And therefore, there's a huge literature, there are masses of material on performance indicators and these related issues. Now, having myself attended some meetings and heard OBA people, the sort of commercially involved people, having heard civil servants, local government officials, all talk about OBA, they seem to be largely unaware of you know, where OBA is located and about all this amount of public administration material which they must, well, they should actually in some ways locate it or discuss. So that's really the background to why you're taking a little critical approach and then moving on to the two other topics that I'm going to deal with. But of course, there are many different types of outcome-based approaches. There's quite a large number. You probably couldn't guess how many there are. There are also, of course, academics within the field who don't approve of outcomes approach at all. I mean, one quite eminent one is Professor Caroline Glendenning, who thinks you should never use the term outcomes, that it's too vague, that in a sense everything is an outcome, so the term is basically meaningless, and so you'll get that school of thought, but there still are, there still is quite a lot of interest and promotion of outcomes-based approaches. And I obviously can't go through very many of them, but I just wanted to mention the four categories, or three, that's of related interest to OBA. First of all, the classical definition, and this is in the book by Pollitt and Bookhart on public administration. And they give what tends to be the accepted definition, the most classical definition of needs or objectives, followed by inputs, followed by activities, followed by outputs, followed by outcomes. That's the kind of classical methodology of outcome-based approach. The second one, the logic model, this is one that has become very popular. It's a fairly general model, and it consists, there's a slight error here, but it consists of priorities, inputs, outputs, and then short, medium, and long-term outcomes. So, a typo there, it should be outcomes. That's the logic model, and one actually advocated really by the Scottish Parliament, for example, the logic model. But there are variations of the logic model. There's even references in Scotland to using two of these variations, what's called the Wisconsin model, and secondly, what's called the Weaver's Triangle model. These are variations of the logic model as a methodology. But then the third one I wanted to mention is one because it's used extensively in England, which many of these are not used extensively in England. That's outcomes frameworks related to the National Health Service. And there are three of these frameworks in use, one for the NHS itself, one for public health, and one for adult social care, the ASCOF, which is a very well-known one, adult social care outcomes. It's recently been adopted by Wales for similar use, and these are not that different. They identify domains, such as quality of care, something like that, different domains. They look at performance indicators that they put forward, but quite a large number of performance indicators, up to about 40 or like that. Then they collect both objective and subjective data. Where they are slightly different is they put a great deal of emphasis on user perceptions. A lot of it, even maybe up to 50%, is user perception of the outcomes, And then the last step is to apply the lessons fairly generally to sort of policy, apply the lessons. And then we come to the OBA, the Outcome-Based Accountability Framework. Now, of course, where it's different, and as the Friedman says, is that it works backwards, or it says it's working backwards. So it starts at where the other ones end, it starts with the outcomes, as they're called, then has a small number of indicators, which are numerical indicators, 4 to 6, then collects the data, analyzes the data, and probably, it's not very clear about this actually, but as interpreted by the Programme for Government, it would then specify the activities. It would specify the activities. So that's the OBA and how it's different. Now, the last sort of topic that I'm looking at is just briefly to look at some of the key conceptual issues that I think arise with OBA. And there's three of them here. I'll say a bit more about the third one, but the first two fairly briefly. And one is fairly straightforward and simple, and that is the meaning of outcomes, the use of the word outcomes, and the way in which OBA uses the word. And of course, that is not really in its normal meaning. I mean, outcomes means an achievement or what has happened, what is retrospective. But if you read OBA, what they mean by outcomes is a desired outcome or even an imagined outcome. They do say it can be an imagined outcome. So it's not an actual outcome. Now, that makes quite a difference in how you begin to analyse it, because it means if it's an actual outcome, then it's an empirical statement. If it's an imagined or desired outcome, it becomes a normative or value-laden statement. So, it's more necessary then for, if you're advocating OBA, to be clear that you're talking about desired outcomes. So there is a difference in language. And the second major criticism of the definition of outcomes is one that comes really from the academic work again. And that is that in OBA and other outcome-based systems, they conflate a number of different items into the term outcomes. That is, they're putting together a kind of package which includes objectives, aims, goals, targets, benchmarks, and outputs. And there's quite a lot of criticism of OBA at times because it tries to state that there isn't a distinction between outputs and outcomes, and other people argue that's an important distinction. So that's the issue about the meaning. I haven't put the name in there. There's one or two names of authors we refer to, and you will find the full reference in the paper we sent out. But if you wanted to explore that view, it's really Professor Alison Petch in Scotland, who was head of the Institute for Social Services Research in Scotland. And she has several papers about outcomes approaches, and this is one of her criticisms. Secondly, sorry, apologise again for a sort of grammatical point here. There's really three points there, three different points. What does indicators mean? Well, one argument is that in OBA it's been used as a proxy, and that's because the outcomes are far too vague to be measured. They're often unmeasurable, so that they have to move to proxy outcomes, or things that hint at or replace the outcome. Secondly, there should be a sort of mark after measure there. Secondly, often only as a definition, that the indicators are just giving you a definition of what's put forward as the general outcome, and definitions don't mean a great deal. Or thirdly, and this is more important, they're actually being put forward as the cause of the outcomes, that the indicators, there's an assumption that they will cause the outcomes. Now, the third point then is, to follow that up, the relationship between indicators and outcomes. And this is the last of my slides. That is that OBA makes this assumption, and this is probably the main theoretical criticism of OBA that you find, that it makes an assumption of a simplistic causal relationship between the indicators and the outcomes. That is, if they have the outcome, very general, they have six indicators, they're really assuming that these six indicators will cause that outcome. Now, the best expression of this, if you want to read it, is by Tony Beauverde, 2014, in his article about attributing outcomes to social policy interventions, gold standard or fool's gold. So he's quite critical in his approach, and he's arguing that OBA involves a narrow, underspecified cause and effect chain model. That is their assumption, even though they may not be aware of it. This is what they're actually doing. And Tony Beauvoir, as some of you may know, of course, is a very eminent figure in public administration. He's a worldwide reputation. And if he has been so critical, you have to take it seriously. Now, you get other expressions following that up, that actual outcomes are very complex. So there's a whole interplay of factors. You can't reduce it to a short list of numbers, or you can't simply measure it. And to try and work it all out and what are the actual causes would be very resource intensive, as Connolly writes, or as Professor Carol Tannehill puts it, outcomes emerge from complex system. She's a policy advisor to the Scottish government, Carol Tannehill. So that it's much more complex than the OBA makes assumptions about. So I'll hand over now to Anne-Marie to talk, to just finish on OBA and the policy implications.